That's something we all should know. That's a very important principle you can write on the refrigerator, which is don't overtalk people. It does, why are we talking anyway? Huh? Are we talking for your own gratification, or are you talking to be of service? I mean, obviously it's both, but what's really important? Is it really important that you just yak and yak and yak? Or is it really important that you help someone? Seems to me, higher than the pleasure, my pleasure, I mean, I do this for myself, higher than my pleasure in yak yak yakking is actually my making available or sharing with them something that they want that'll help them, that they want, that they value, what they value, not me having fun yakking. And therefore, I want to shut up when they're not listening, when it's not helpful to them. I want to be quiet when it's not helpful to them. I want to stop myself when it's not helpful to them. Because it, everything I want to say may not be helpful to them. And being helpful to them is more important to me as a value than, yakking for my own pleasure. This is a very critical principle of right speech. Yeah, it's a form of ahimsa or harmlessness. But it's right speech to speak only that which is beneficial, right? That's what we've spoken about in Gautama's principles of right speech in Buddhism. Ki, one of those that are non-negotiable, like factual, true and factual is non-negotiable, and beneficial is non-negotiable. At the right time, or kindly, or spoken to be spoken in a kindly way or a accessible way is a little bit negotiable in the sense that to speak kindly to people who are being harsh may not be of much benefit, or it might be necessary sometimes to speak harsh or speak strongly. And I don't think there's a big problem with that at the right time, in the right situation, with a person who it seems needs a slap in the face. There are people who are actively harmful who need a little bit stronger speech. So that's a bit negotiable, kindly speech. But beneficial speech is not negotiable. And beneficial speech is not only that which we determine in our mind is helpful, but also that we determine by observation and attentiveness to the other person's process that which they still want to hear, not going into that which we're talking while they're not available, they're not interested, or they're not capable of following, or they're not with us anymore in the sharing of the talking. So attentiveness, being attentive to the other person's process as we're talking, I think is critical, because I really don't want to talk if the person doesn't want to listen, and I personally don't want to talk and keep talking if I can determine that the person doesn't find it relevant. I mean, I can talk to myself, that's just fine, but I'm not gonna I think it's unhelpful and it's selfish for me to be talking to people when I determine they're not present or seeking my further talking. Well, that's right. So ahimsa means is a teaching against harsh speech, against malicious speech, against divisive speech, against speech intended to hurt, and also speech that's not beneficial. And then comes the very subtle discernment: what is beneficial? Surely, talking when the person doesn't want to hear is not beneficial. Or, in most cases, I mean, if the person is an aggressor, then my rules are loosened for myself quite considerably. But meeting fire with fire a little bit is just fine. But in general, what is beneficial speech? That's a really key principle for us to reflect on. So true and factual and beneficial being non-negotiable, that we need further discernment and sensitivity to determine in principle and in practice, right? The principle and the practice are a little different. The practice is the application of principle. And our skill in practice or in real life conversation. The skill will be only as great as our understanding of principle. Well, we understand the principle of ahimsa, meaning right speech. Ahimsa in speech being right speech, being factual, true and factual and beneficial. And so, true and factual doesn't mean saying everything. True and factual doesn't mean saying things that may lead to unnecessary hurt. And it also certainly is not a call to unbridled, over-talking people because it's just true. Everything I'm saying is true. Well, is it beneficial? So it may be true. But that's not enough. Then we have to determine the principle of beneficial and what's really helpful. And for us, who have a lot to say, we generally find, I think our reality experience is that most people can handle and they really want far less than we would like to offer in terms of quantity of speech. And so we really need to be careful about that. We hurt people, we confuse them, we get ourselves into trouble, we regret, and it's not beneficial to over-talk people beyond their quite conscious, actually willing desire to continue listening to our speech. If they don't consciously will and wish to continue hearing, then we really should drop it right away. At least that's how I live. And that's fine for me, you know? When the electric bus turns off, when the electric bus stops, the field is silent. So I take my model from the electric bus. When the bus stops, the motor turns off. So I think that's a very good point. And actually, I had not considered that, and you're absolutely right. That's a good insight. There's the specific case of pre-incarnate, a person having significant dietary limitations or allergies, food allergies, as you're saying. When that is programmed catalyst, or when by activity during one's lifetime one gets oneself into that condition of significant dietary limitation and allergies and things like that. There are many examples. In both cases, either case, first of all, what's happening? What are the consequences? The consequences are primarily that the person has to focus more attention on eating properly, on body care, on food, and on health, and on body, and on discernment and vigilance in food selection every day for the rest of their life. That's an example of narrow path or significant, difficult, challenging catalyst or experiential catalyst that akin to a narrow path in a sense, or how I use that phrase, absolutely demand. The nature of the catalyst, the purpose of the catalyst, can be understood by analysis or understanding of its consequences and the appropriate or necessary self-adjustment to most capably handle that catalyst. So the purpose of any catalyst is ultimately the adjustments of mind necessary to cope and handle and return to balance in the face of such catalyst. And I mean that's there's more purpose to catalyst than that, but that's a significant principle in the purpose, and understanding the purpose of catalyst is understanding how the person needs to adjust mind and behavior in response to return to balance. Now, in dietary limitations like that, yeah, the person must every day, in the case if it's pre-incarnative, every day focus on body health, how I feel, mind attentive to body, and looking down, not looking up into the world of thought, but more into the world of sensation and body health and wise food selection daily. That's very narrowing, but that may be that is a karmic bal that is a karmic return that can be extremely helpful for multi-incarnational balancing. It could be helpful for a person who's been too much in their head. It's karmically, it's also body limitations like that and health issues are often associated with karma of harming others' bodies in the past. Maybe you starved people. Maybe you restricted people's food in the past. I mean, I'm not saying you did. I'm not saying you're bad. But various body, like red is the fire, it's inflammation, obviously. It's inability to process toxin, which is a deep metaphysical understanding of why people are stuck in anger. Inability to metabolize, break down, and release toxin of anger, of old hurt, anger, rage, resentment, dot, dot, dot. So, yes, this would be food, dietary limitations, as you're saying, require the mind to pay close and continuing attention to the body, to health, to sensations in the body, and to careful food selection every day. That may lead to a softening of the heart, or an opening of heart chakra, a further activation of heart chakra, which means by the avenue of greater self-love, or body self-care. Self-care to body. Take good care of your body. So the person who has that kind of, dietary limitation or allergies with food and all that is being called upon by the catalyst to love body more, to love the self by increased attentiveness to body care more, for sure. And that's an example of the narrow path kind of thing. And that's the case with all catalysts, more or less. And so that's one. And then the second, which you brought up, which is a really insightful point, which is the very narrowing of attention, demanding daily focused attentiveness to sensations in the body, what I'm eating, how I'm feeling, what really works for me, and then how that evolves over time, and then the social portion of it, which is. Sorry, you may be happy that I eat what you're giving me, but I just can't. Or, sorry to myself, I might want to go there and eat that with them or something, but I just can't. That is also a narrowing of attention, certainly to the body level and health and physical sensation and food selection. And yes, in your case, absolutely, it is part of the needed focusing of mind attention so that you can determine what's more important than something else, you see. It's not important to say everything all the time. It's more important to say certain things each time, anytime, in any situation. There is more or less important. Like right now, I could go on for 10 minutes telling you the story of my body or my life or my catalyst or something like that. But I don't think it's relevant, and I'd rather go back to your needs, not than mine. And Also, it's personal, and you know, it's not appropriate and whatever. But this kind of seeking right focus, you know, there's right speech, and there's in Buddhism there's something called right concentration. It's actually a stage. It's in the samadhi group of Sila Samadhi Prajna, as the Eightfold Path can be divided, and there's a 3-3-2 division. The Buddhism is very subtle, and some early Buddhist analysts like Buddhaghosa and some early Theravadins, you know, 2,000 years ago, 500 years after Buddha's death, were able to categorize things like, you know, the three divisions of the Eightfold Path into Sila, Samadhi, Prajna. How about that? So there's right concentration as one of the Eightfold Path, like right speech or right action. But the right concentration was applied to samadhi, but we can also say that right concentration can be applied to wise attention of mind in determining what's more important, what's less important in speech and in your mind's focus. You know, you can spend 6 hours studying, you know, astronomical analysis of the Oort belt, and how it might relate to, you know, Nibiru's path of entry in the solar system. Well, that may be interesting, but is it really important for you? It may be. For some people, it surely is. But for some people, or for some mind that just likes quantity, it isn't. And so, yes, that needed sensitivity to relative importance. And that's exactly what Ra said too, when Don asked, "What are you doing here? What's your purpose?" And Ra said, "You know, it was not simply offering information, but offering their perspective on proper weighting of information. Meaning, they're not sharing simply information, but a perspective that some information is more important than others." And what's most important are principles, the principles of soul evolution, and not specific facts and figures that are associated with what they call transient information. So transient information is less important than the key principles of cosmogenesis, you know, of soul evolution and cosmic plan. That's what the key principles are of soul evolution and cosmic plan. But the proper weighting, how to weight, Weight, to the balance, the weighing of what's most important and what's not, how I use my time, how I use my speech, what I say, who I'm with, how long I'm with them, how long I let people talk before I say, "Sorry, I gotta go," or how much I'm saying in my belief that I'm helping them. Is it helpful when they're looking the other way and checking their cell phone for me to keep talking? This kind of subtle discernment is a higher order than simply factual speech or beneficial speech. How much factual quantity and quality and direction of factual speech? How much to speak? And what areas of factuality ought I share? And beneficial speech, sure, we know that, but how about beneficial for what purpose? You know, do I really know their mind well enough? So anyway, this higher order, I think, discernment of what of that refines our understanding of beneficial speech, or refines our understanding of how to spend our time, or how to use our mind in terms of what we pay attention to. The discernment, or the careful, wise weighing of value in terms of what we pay attention to and spend our time doing versus what we recognize as less important and less helpful to self and other. And the value of focusing and not getting you know, dissolved in spinning around just for this that doesn't really have great benefit. It ultimately comes to an analysis or a weighing of benefit, cost benefit analysis, but a weighing of relative value between a wide a paying attention in a wide to a wide angle in which there's significant quantity of items for consideration versus the value of narrowing focus to a smaller quantity of items for consideration or areas to spend our time, which is more akin to, yes, as you're saying, the need for attentiveness to appropriate dietary choices and selections. So yes, they're very related. I mean, you know, you have you. It's like you have a 12-cylinder engine, and a good sports car mind. Are you gonna go in circles? Are you? Do you just want to drive to, you know, endlessly down the highway? What are you gonna do with it? Yeah, it's actually asceticism. It's sort of excessive asceticism, which, you know, in Buddhism, being Gautama saying that this is a middle way teaching, between all extremes, all polarized extremes, including, you know, eternalism and nihilism in terms of a view of self or mind or goal, not falling into materialism or a kind of superstitious spirituality in terms of diet, not too little, not too much. And that's why, you know, for them, eating once a day was just fine. And I think that's actually quite fine. And in terms of body care, it means not, you know, there's a term called self-mortifying, self-mortification, MORTIF. It's a French word, you know, it comes from Latin, and French has a word, mort means death, right? Anyway, that term, self-mortification, is applied to, you know, yogis who are hardcore ascetics, which means, you know, like what Gautama was experimenting with before he realized that it was futile to starve the body. You know, you see there are some very famous sculptures of Gautama sitting in meditation with his rib cage, you know, protruding. And I put that on the YouTube videos once upon a time. It's definitely, I mean, I knew a guy in college, I've used this example before at Naropa, who also believed that he had done very hardcore ascetic practice in past life. And simply, and he chose, he had a girlfriend that was very, in my view, very unattractive. And he had no sexual interest in her or no ability to be sexual with her, even though he sort of wished he could or did or had. And he considered that partly a karmic return to excessive asceticism, of doing certain practices to destroy desire, body desire. And there are some very hardcore practices like meditating in what's called a charnel ground. They still do that with in Tibet. Still, Tibetan Buddhists still do some practice like that, and Theravadins still do practice like that. Meditating in the place where bodies are decomposing and being eaten by vultures. What a nice practice. And if you have any attachment, you know, as we all have attachment to beauty, physical beauty of the opposite sex, or whatever, and sexual desire and body cherishing, that undercuts it pretty well to see bodies rotting, decomposed, and being picked at by vultures. But the result of that, if that practice is done with distortion of self-punishment motivation, I hate my desire, I hate myself for having such a desire, I hate the body, I hate sexuality, I hate opposite sex, whatever. All of that is a setup for future incarnative catalyst programming of the sort that reveals, that presents certain limitations that the person has got to work through, that would ultimately counter that hatred and replace, help the person replace it with love. Like, there's nothing wrong with the body. Or, I do need to take care of my body. Or, I shouldn't starve myself, and I shouldn't, you know, hate body or sensuality. You know, because Gautama's not saying hate sensuality. He's really just saying it's a trap. And, of course, it is, if we're significantly attached. But also, today is different than 2,500 years ago, and the mind is more capable of certain balances. So, yes, chronic illness would be often karmic result from harming others' bodies in past lives. Gautama talked about that. We talked about in the discussion of karma, sickness and chronic illness as a result of physical harm of others in past lives. And body of food sensitivity, allergies, could be related to that. It can also, as you're saying, very much be related to excessive self-mortification. You know, self-mortification is excessive already. And misguided asceticism or body rejection in mind in past life. Sometimes one can see past life karmic load as black marks on the forehead. Any kind of black mark in the above the eyebrows, the temples, and the forehead zone are often indicative of past life spirit complex distortion or karmic carry through. I don't think you have that, but yes, as you're thinking, this kind of, chronic food allergies or hypersensitivity requiring a limited diet for well-being may certainly be a counterbalance to a previous neglect of body and a previous pattern of anger or aggression towards body, non-loving attitudes and treatment of body. So, yeah, that adjustment of attitude towards limitation is a portion of the deeper healing for which we have planned such limitation. So the purpose of the catalyst is the needed changes for its resolution. And part of the needed changes to make resolution to body that has, you know, food allergies. Food allergies, again, are different than dietary choices. I mean, there are dietary choices may be associated with bodily limitations of what the body can process and cannot. Dietary choices can be more voluntary also, in that I could eat this and I can handle this and I can handle that. I'm simply choosing this for now. Different. But certainly in facing unwanted limitations that, you know, are imposed upon mind by body, or imposed upon our lifestyle by body limitations or body conditions that simply can't handle, you know, like can't handle what the mind would like, then attitude adjustment or making peace with those limitations and trying to understand why they are in place is helpful. So, like, I might want to stay up until 3 a.m. every night reading or doing this or that, but if I do that for 5 days in a row, I'll get sick. So, or I'll have trouble. So the mind has to bow to the body. And that's a significant part of 3D incarnation for wanderers, 6D wanderers anyway, which is, oh, this body can't do everything I want it to do. This body cannot fulfill my mind. meaning the mind wants this and that, but this body can't allow it. I have to take a shower every day or every other day. I have to go to the toilet, you know, whether I like it or not. I have to eat somewhat, whether I like it or not, because I'd rather have that limitation than the consequence of trying to break it, meaning not eating and getting sick, or not sleeping and getting sick, or this and that. So, conforming, you know, conforming the mind or conforming the mind or the life to certain pre-incarnative limitations or body conditions that are limiting, or requirements for maintaining body health, is a really important part of how we need to adjust ourselves to 3D physical space-time and having a body that's really quite fragile, you know? A little bacterium, a little inhaled something, a little bite from a spider or a snake can do us in. So this body is quite frail. Even big tough guys, you know, get trouble and, you know, die a mess. So anything can happen. So mind needs to respect body limitations and body requirements or health, well-being requirements associated with body needs, bodily needs, including, you know, sleep and sexuality, including all sorts of things, actually. There are many yogi types who hate the body because they have sexual desire or desire for sleep or food. And in the past, people have definitely, in Buddhism, Hinduism, yogic traditions, gotten into trouble by trying to go against the body. And that's why Gautama said, you know, like tuning the strings of a lute, not too tight, not too loose, not too tight, not too loose. Right. There are lots of wanderers. I mean, that's just part of aging in 3D space time. And aging, you know, aging gracefully, whatever that is, certainly includes adjusting the lifestyle to the increasing limitations of the body and adjusting the mind or making peace in the mind to the changed lifestyle in accord with the aging body with its increasing limitations. But there also are ways of working with that. So, meaning, if you want to live to 150, do Qigong 3 hours a day and be super careful on diet and sleep and meditation, and you really can live over 100, 120, very healthy, and you'll be fine till the end, more or less. That really is true. I mean, I have no doubt. So there's the famous Li Qing Yuan, supposed to live to about 200 and, you know, or 250 or something. Chinese guy, but he's a big guy and did Qigong and was super careful with all these things from the age 30 or so. So, you know, one can certainly work with the body in many ways, but the bodies do age. And it's a maturity, you know, to give to Caesar what's due to Caesar. And the mind can be free, but the mind's dependence on the body is a problem. Meaning, to the extent to which the mind makes promises, as the song says, or the mind or we seek pleasure and fulfillment in association with bodily process. Maybe food, maybe sex, maybe sleep, maybe exercise. Some people push their body with exercise and don't realize that they're aging and they shouldn't try to do what they did when they're 30, when they're 60. So, these are all portions of the needed le of these are all portions of mind learning in third density, and relevant for everyone, more or less, because we all have a body that's you know, getting older. So the mind needs to get older or more mature as the body ages too. Okay, good. Okay, so that'll be all for today. Thanks everybody, and I'm glad we're going to be doing questions. That's a very satisfying way, I think. So please take good care of yourselves. Talk to you soon, and see you next time. Okay, good night.